Law Focus Podcast.
Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Good evening. It is the 11th of August, and you are tuned into Law Focus on Vow FM 88.1 with Millicent Ndumeni and Thapo Mohati. Hope all the women had a pleasant Women's Day amidst all the challenges and difficulties we continue to strive toward. It really has become one of those solemn commemorations with many unanswered questions. We shed spotlight tonight on the awful plight of police brutality under the lockdown regulations. What you can look forward to this evening is someone, Titus Manetti, an Alexandra resident, sharing their experience of police brutality, surviving a shooting earlier in March when the lockdown was instituted. We also have IPIT spokesperson Ndile Gatola, who will then speak to how they have a duty to hold the police accountable, including for acts of brutality against citizens, and whether they are doing a good job at it. This is all part one of our focus on police brutality under the lockdown regulations. Part two will continue next week, Tuesday, the 18th of August at 7 p.m. right here on Vow FM 88.1. But before we proceed to the conversation for the evening, let us have a look at what top legal changes and stories are taking place that might affect you and you need to know about it. Here are our legal hotspots for the week.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week, it's Legal Hotspots.
The ANC in Gauteng are expected to start investigating allegations of corruption against some of its members, which include Khusela Diko, she is the presidential spokesperson, and Bandile Masuku, who is the MEC for Health in Gauteng. Some of the allegations are that Diko's husband, Thandi Sizwe, was unduly awarded a 125 million rand contract to supply PPE to the Gauteng government. Now, the Gauteng province has been identified as the epicenter of the epidemic. Now, this comes after Justice and Correction Services Minister Ronald Lamola on Thursday announced that 36 corruption-related cases are being investigated and are at various stages of prosecution in an attempt to weed out the rampant corruption.
In our second legal hotspot for the evening, there have been some changes made to South Africa's border system, which will ensure that cross-border crimes, such as the trading of illicit cigarettes, which has increased under the current national lockdown, are better dealt with. New legislation was introduced in July, bringing into effect the Border Management Authority Act 2 of 2020, which will ensure that travel between borders is secure and all movement is legal, to also prevent the smuggling of human trafficking, amongst other measures. So, to everyone who makes use of borders, let's acquaint ourselves with the new laws and powers of the border officials. And only time will tell whether these new measures will render themselves effective. And in our last story for this evening, the Office of the Presidency has announced that South Africa is one of the countries selected as a global leader for the Generation Equality Action Coalitions to accelerate gender equality, economic justice, gender-based violence, and femicide by the UN Women. Action coalitions are global partnerships that drive actions to advance gender equality and women's rights towards an equal future. Each coalition is expected to launch an immediate concrete action between 2021 and 2026 to deliver tangible impact on gender equality and rights of women and girls. And that, ladies and gentlemen, are our legal hotspots for the evening. Please do stay tuned before we continue to the next conversation with Millicent Ndumeni and Thapo Mohati on Law Focus right here on Vow FM 88.1.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week, it's Legal Hotspots.
I will tell you that she is a bone made alive, with distinctions that set her apart as does the difference between a firefly and a new poem.
What does woman mean to you? Whether it means being a go-getter, or it means being yourself unapologetically, we celebrate you this Women's Month on Vow FM 88.1.
Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
South Africa is among several nations facing an international outcry over increases in COVID-19 related violence against residents by law enforcement officers. And most of these incidents, you get that poor and vulnerable populations are the ones who are most affected. It's unfortunate that some of the victims have succumbed to police abuse, something that is absolutely uncalled for. Painful though his experience may be, Titus Manetti from Alexandria is one of the fortunate victims who survived these brutalities. He joins us tonight to share his unfortunate, regrettable experience. Titus, welcome to No Focus. Thank you for joining us this evening.
It's a pleasure.
So, how about you go through the 31st of March? It started off as an ordinary day for you. However, things turned for the worse at a later stage. What exactly happened that afternoon when you're coming home from the shop?
I remember clearly it was on the 31st, it was on a Tuesday afternoon, something to 5. I was from Boxer Superstore from Bain. So on my way back home, I requested a taxi to deliver me at my gate as I had too much to carry of the grocery. So as I arrived by my gate, I offloaded the first load of the grocery and then went into the house, dropped it. And then on my way back, I was tied to the taxi. As soon as I arrived, before I can even reach the taxi, there was a Toyota Corolla. It was white. It didn't have any print. It was tinted, it had tinted windows. So to my surprise, I just had someone opening the window and shouting at me, pointing a gun at me, also saying that, get inside the house, what you want outside, and then just started firing shots at me. He fired about 5 shots, and then only 2 caught me on my left hand. So I started to run inside the house now, and then because now I wasn't thinking straight, I even forgot about my grocery. But after 10 minutes, I went out to check again. There was no car anymore, and then the taxi had already left with my grocery also, because they didn't know what was happening, actually.
That's painful.
So,
that's painful.
Yeah. How did you feel when they were pointing a gun at you? You were still in the taxi when they pointed a gun at you, right? How did you feel?
Well, at first, I thought maybe they were just pointing just to chase me away, but I started hearing shots, and then I saw some blood flowing out of my hand. That's when I noticed that this thing is serious. Let me run away for my life.
Sure. Other passengers?
They were still in the taxi, and then I went out, take the grocery inside the house, and then I was coming to fetch the last load of my grocery. So when after the shot, I went to check the taxi. The taxi is gone, because I think he just had the fire shot, me getting shot, and then they started maybe moving in with this guy, you know, because he never knew what was happening. Because those people, they didn't have a car that can show that it's a police. It's like those who were Toyota cars. But it's only that I saw them inside. They were police. I think it was Caucasian police. Those ones who wear that brown uniform, like close to the Metro Police one.
Sure. Everything seems to have happened very quickly. So after the gunshot, you know, what exactly did you do? And, you know, the police as well, did they just drive off? Like, what was it like immediately after the, you know, it was clear that you were hurt?
I went outside to look for someone to take me to the clinic. So when I go outside the gate, there was this other old man next door to me. He was shot on the hand. I think they started thinking before coming to me. And then there's this other one who shot the other guy, the Zimbabwean guy. He stayed on the opposite also. He witnessed those people shooting at me. And then I heard him telling me that they also shot me on the thigh.
saying to him, what are you looking at?
Telling him the police, they just drove off after that incident.
And there wasn't anything that kind, there wasn't a confrontation or, you know, like an argument or anything like that.
Nothing like that. If there's someone just opening the window, get inside the house, what are you doing outside? And then, boom, just started firing shots.
So, and have you managed to largely contend with ISIS?
Pardon?
And we would use independent investigative direction.
I can't hear you clearly now.
Have you largely contend with ISIS?
No.
So have you largely contend with anybody about that incident?
Yes. First, I went to the clinic, and then so I told them that what must I do to open a case? And then they said to me, there's no case for rubber bullets. So it is up until the Sowetan guys came into my house, and then we made an interview, and this other guy from other media company. So it's the ones that told me that no, I've got the right to open a case. And then, of which exactly I did open a case, and then they offered me an advocate, and then I gave the advocate everything.
Okay. So you got some legal assistance?
Yeah, I got some legal assistance, and then there's an attorney that came by my house, and then I gave him everything, and then, yeah, I'm still waiting on him to get back at me.
Okay.
And although you were, you know, because you were shocked, you might have been severely hurt. How did this incident affect you emotionally and physically? And do you feel that maybe it has also somehow affected your work?
Yes, it did affect me emotionally, because even now, you know, when I see the police and stuff, you know, I become even bitter, you understand? So even the hand now, I'm still on the outside, but internally there's still those pains, especially when in the cloudy weather, that's where I start feeling pain, because it has opened the hole, because you could see my bone. And so now, that bone is stiffle. I healed on the outside, but on the inside, I'm still in the pain.
And what are you managing, though, at work?
I'm struggling a bit, because now at work, sometimes we carry baby stuff, because we work with furniture, aluminum, steel, so it's hard for me to carry such stuff. Because immediately I carry something heavy, my hand starts to shake. So, yeah, that's the problem I'm facing now.
Right.
And what would you like to see happen to the perpetrators, you know? What would you like, to happen to them? But also, what would you like for yourself to try and make this incident more bearable?
Well, I don't want much, but I need to be compensated for what they did to me, because what they did to me is something that is uncalled for.
Absolutely. Titus, your story is painful. You know, it's a reflection of how, you know, the police use their power in a very unfortunate manner right now. You are the one who has to deal with the trauma, the physical pain, being unable to work properly, you know, your income is affected because of these kind of things. And I think we'd really like to thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Titus Manetti is an Alexandra resident who shares the painful story that he endured by the police. We really appreciate your time, Titus. All the best with your legal case, and do keep well.
Okay, no, it's only a pleasure. And then thank you guys for having me on your radio show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sandra.
Law Focus on Solve 88.1.
point of information.
All right, so welcome back. We're now joined by the spokesperson for the for IPID, the Independent Police Investigative Director, Ms. Ndileka Xola, who'll be giving us a breakdown of the cases that have been opened against the police so far. While outdoor activities are now allowed, the interprovincial traveling and the sale of alcohol are still prohibited countrywide. Enforcement of these stringent policies has seen many, many law enforcement officers being deployed all over the country in the last few months. Some of these, of course, have led to complaints about the police and some of the activities. And the people that handle these types of complaints is IPID. So we're joined by Ms. Ndileka Xola. Hello, Ms. Xola, how are you?
I'm very well, Tepo. Thanks, how are you?
I'm fine. Can you hear me well?
Much better. Thanks.
Okay.
Am I audible?
Yes, you're perfect, huh? Just perfect.
Okay.
Well, welcome to Law Focus. Is it possible for you to give us a quick idea of more or less the number of cases that have been opened since the beginning of lockdown in March of this year? Do you know?
Yes. The number of cases that have been opened are 588 for the period of the national lockdown. And these cases, this number that's 588 is for the period from the 26th of March to the 10th of June. So anything else that has happened between now and June, it doesn't form part of the statistics that I'm giving you now. So these are the cases that we have received, and they've been allocated, and some of them are being still undergoing investigations. So are they in various stages of investigation in actual fact? And then some have been finished. Some have sent the recommendations to either SAPS and NPA.
Now, that's only about 2.5 months or so, if you say from about... Yeah. Is that normal to have about 500 complaints in a 2.5 month period, or is that unusual?
Definitely, it's not usual. It is not a usual case. This number has gone quite high.
Sure. Okay.
And now that you guys have, like, this, you know, huge... numbers that you guys have to now deal with, what exactly do you do taking, you know, moving forward? I think there might be people who don't know what IPID does who are listening. There are people who might not know what IPID does who are listening. Are you able to perhaps, you know, explain your line of work and then also let us know, once the case is reported, what is the procedure until you get to dealing with whoever it is who was the perpetrator?
Okay, so the process generally of lodging complaints, it starts with the legislation. Let me start with legislation. South African Police Service has got a mandate. They have a responsibility to ensure that whenever there's a case that's reported to any SAPS police station, they have a responsibility to report to IPID. They are required by the IPID Act to do so. They're compelled by the IPID Act to do so. So once we receive them, the docket over from SAPS, then IPID commences with its investigation process. It depends, it varies from cases to cases. For example, other cases, with our investigators would go to the crime scene and then they would do their own assessment. But for other cases, it would depend on the time frames and also on the nature of the complaint. So if it's post the event or the occurrence, then our investigators would do them the investigation. So then we obtain witness statements, obtain statements from witnesses that have seen the case, we obtain statements from the complainant, we get statements as well from the accused. And then the investigation process unfolds. So once we're done with the investigation, there's two things that happen with our reports. For cases that are of criminal nature, we send a report to the NPA, and then the NPA can then charge them, the accused, criminally. For example, if it's a murder case, then that one goes straight to the NPA. And then for any other cases that that relate to police, that have got to do with the employer-employee relationship, then such cases we send to the CPS with recommendations, and then we could recommend that the person is dismissed. We can recommend that the person gets leave without pay. We can recommend that leave without pay, person is dismissed, or anything that's within the Labor Relations Act. So then that's the process. And then after we've given the recommendations or the report to NPA, then they've got an obligation to revert back to IPIT within a period of 30 days. So within 30 days, they're going to revert back to us. They're going to inform us if they have they concur with our findings, and then they're implementing them as they are, or if they've got a different finding to the IPIT investigation. So basically, that's the process. And then in between, we've got meetings with those key stakeholders, and then on processes and on cases and the nature of cases and how they're handled.
Okay, it sounds like a lot. I think maybe for my sake, I would need clarity on something. IPIT, then, does IPIT deal with all types of cases, and it's not a limited mandate on police investigations only? Because, you know, as you were speaking, I was wondering, okay, that means if a docket goes missing at a police station, if IPIT has that information, then cases don't have to, you know, stop in the air somehow, or am I misunderstanding?
Okay, the mandate of IPIT is very much unlimited. We're an oversight body that oversees what police, we are really responsible for the oversight over police officials as well as municipal police officials. So what we do is that we even within the police, we don't investigate each and every case that pertains to the police. We investigate death as a result of a police action. We investigate death in police custody. We investigate if a police discharges a firearm, we investigate that. And then if there's rape by the police or in police custody, we investigate such cases, as well as torture and assault by police officials and other matters of corruption or anything that our executive director or the minister can deem, or the MEC for that matter of the province can deem that it's important for IPIT to investigate. But it has to be a matter that includes the police, that has been committed by the police officer. So we basically police the police.
Right, I see. Now, you say the mandate is very wide, and it seems like it is, but the cases...
Did I say limited?
Limited. You said it was quite unlimited, not limited. Quite limited?
Quite limited.
Oh, it's quite limited. Okay.
It's limited to these areas that I've just alluded to.
Right. Maybe I misheard. Okay. But what I wanted to know is the cases that sort of tend to make the news are the cases where there's been some kind of violence allegedly by the police to a member of the public, or something violent has happened in police custody. Of the cases that you, as IPIT, have to deal with, how many of those typically in a year would involve death of an individual? So either in custody or the death of somebody occurs at the hands of a police officer. How many of those in a year is it typical for IPIT to deal with?
All right. I do not have that sort of statistics with me right now, but I'm pretty much sure on our annual report, which is a public document, we would have that as that sort of statistics that would indicate on an annual basis the sort of cases that we receive. But because when we're preparing for this interview, we're preparing specifically for the period of the lockdown and the COVID-19 related operation. So during the period, the number of people that have died in the hands of police were 11 that IPIT is currently investigating. And then these are the cases that are as a result of contravention of disaster management regulations.
And of those cases of the people who have, the case that you have received during lockdown, what else besides death has been prevalent?
Okay, besides death is assault, torture and assault, as well as discharge of official firearm. So those are three main matters that that we are investigating.
And what would you say in terms of ethnicity and gender, both of those tortures and assaults, who is most likely to be the victim, and in which provinces do we mostly see such cases being reported?
Okay, we do not have the statistical information. Do you know what the challenge that we normally have at IPED is that we excuse me. As a matter of principle, we communicate our statistics twice a year, half yearly and at the end of the year, for a simple reason that before, when cases are registered and at the point when we've got findings, sometimes it does happen that the nature of the case changes. For example, someone could die because they could have been assaulted by a police officer, and then the case is opened. And then would require the Department of Health officials to come into the scene, and then the doctors, the specialist doctors, would come and do post-mortem. And then when the doctor does post-mortem, then the doctor would come back and say, no, this person did not die as a result of being assaulted by the police. This person has died because of heart attack, for example. So it does happen. Then when you get to the end of the year, then other cases could have completely changed. So that is why IPED, most of the IPED does not necessarily communicate this, especially of cases that are still ongoing, because it happens from time to time that the nature of cases, when they're registered and at the point of findings, the case would have changed. But coming to the cases that we've dealt with during the COVID-19 operations, has had up to here that we're currently investigating. 5 of them are coming from Gauteng, and then 2 are from KZN, and the other 2 is from Western Cape, and then we'd have 1 from Northwest, and then 1 from Western Cape. So it would sort of give you make you understand that which provinces have got more cases that we are investigating as a result of police action, death as a result of police action.
And I'm wondering quickly, the first point that you were explaining about maybe you are investigating a death and then somewhere during there's that novus intervenience and it's no longer the police beating that results in the death, it's a heart attack. What do you guys then do in such a case? It's completely taken away from you, the police perpetrator then goes, nothing gets done with that. I mean, how do you then deal with a case like that? Do you just leave it completely, or is there still a way of, you know, ensuring that you're still monitoring the system to ensure that it's not going to be a repeat offender of or something of the sort?
We definitely do not let the police officials go, because remember, they would have assaulted the person, and assault also qualifies for us to investigate. And remember that, as I've said, it would be a report that is coming from a specialist doctor, a pathologist from the Department of Health. So if a specialist doctor then comes and say, after they've done their own investigation, then they come up with the finding that this person has died as a result of natural causes, then would then still go ahead and investigate the assault that would have occurred. So we don't let them go. We still investigate.
Okay. So, I mean, something must happen. If there's an incident, then there will be consequences, if there need to be consequences. That's what you're saying.
Definitely there will be consequences. Because remember, there would have been a police action that would have resulted to that person, to that case being brought to the attention of IPED, right? And initially, the case would be recorded in IPED system as a death as a result of police action. And then other stakeholders also play a part here. For example, the Department of Health, as I've indicated. Then a specialist doctor comes and say they certify if the person is dead, for example, and then what are the causes of death, and then they do their post-mortem. Then when they come with their post-mortem report, and then the post-mortem report says that this person has died because of natural causes, or this person has died because of heart attack, then we don't necessarily absolve the police, but what we do is that we would then investigate maybe the nature of the investigation and what we would have been investigating in terms of the IPED Act would change. So if we were initially investigating death, then we're going to change.
Okay. I was studying adversity. That we used to do quite a few cases where the accused was a police officer who'd overstepped the mark. And these are old cases, not recent cases. These are, most of them were pre-1994 cases, or they were around about the mid-90s, the cases that we were studying. And it seemed as though there was, at that time, a culture of we must apply the law regardless of who gets hurt and how we hurt the person, we must apply the law. Would you say that in the last 26 years or 30 years or so, the police culture has changed and moved away from that attitude of we must apply the law regardless of what happens? Or do we still have that problem, like we're seeing perhaps in lockdown, where some police officers will say, we must apply the law. The law is the law. It doesn't matter what you know, this is what the rules say, we're going to apply.
I'm struggling to get your actual question here.
So what I'm saying is, for a long time in South Africa, we've had a situation where police officers in the past acted with impunity, where there were no consequences. They simply applied the law, or they went further than what during the apartheid days, even during the mid-90s. What I'm saying is, do you, as IPED, when you observe the police today, has the culture shifted or changed, or has this lockdown exposed some problems that still exist in the police force?
Okay. The reason why police had gone out to the community was to enforce the law, right? Before you have these incidences, police go out into the community, and they go and to do their mandate of enforcing the law, right? So I think it is quite important that before you ask this question, we understand that there's some sort of conduct by community that is contrary to the law. So I think what is important for IPED is that we want to appeal to communities that they must try by all means to abide and conduct themselves within the ambit of the law. Having said that, that does not give the police a supreme right or some sort of power over the people. You understand? So police have got as well, they also have got a responsibility to ensure that they conduct themselves within the SAP Act as well as within their code of conduct. They have a code of conduct. They also have got a responsibility to ensure that they conduct their responsibilities and they enforce the laws within the ambit of the law that also governs them. They are not supreme to the laws of the land. Do you understand? So we always do that. That's why we have IPED to police the police, because police do not have divine power or supreme power over the people. So when they do their responsibility, they also have to observe the law. But we'd also like to encourage the people that they must also observe the rules of the land and try by all means to cooperate with the police. Yeah.
Yes, I understand you. My question was more along the lines of, have things improved in the police force in terms of enforcing the law, but within, you know, the correct, you know, using the correct methods? Has that improved over the years, or are we still having quite a serious problem? What is your view on it? Is the police force getting better?
Okay, I would not have anything data that would date back to the period alluded to up to date. But I also want to indicate to you that the mandate of IPED, as I've indicated earlier, is quite limited, and we are investigating these precise matters that have been prescribed by the IPED Act. So how police are conducting themselves from a particular period, the defined period, I think SAPS would be best empowered to give you that sort of information. If, because there's also other matters that are outside the mandate of IPED that police could be contravening laws on. You understand? So I think that's a, sort of a broad question that goes beyond the scope of IPED, and we wouldn't have that comparative information. But I believe that my colleagues from SAPS, in their communications, they could have ceased.
Okay, thank you so much, Ntileka, for that. I think you said a mouthful, and some of it can be bordering on, it's not confusing as such, but, you know, there are a lot of defined lines that need to be defined and for it to be clear, for the public as well to understand, you know, how the system of keeping the law and having people who might abuse the law, how it's supposed to work. Are police ever justified, would you say, according to your understanding of your mandate as IPED, to ever use force? And then how do we then, if they are, how do we then, you know, define the fine line between the use of force and the police brutality? I'll give you an example. During the lockdown, we've got, you know, a lot of people maybe who are not complying, as you said correctly earlier on. With the lockdown restrictions that have been said, people are outside in the street. We are on level 5. People are not inside the home as we are supposed to. And we know that there's a virus going around. The police are not immune to the virus. They too can get sick. And then how do you then define the line between the police having to say, hey, we're now go inside the house. And then Umuntu does not go into the house. I said, they're chilling. A person is not going into the house. Obviously, there's a risk in the police coming close, handcuffing them, social distancing, I say, Konayo. So how do we then, you know, how is the police supposed to deal with the situation? Like, what's the right thing for them to do so that they also don't break the law in as much as these people are not complying with the law? So that fine line between the use of force, if it can be used at all, and police brutality.
Okay. As IPED, we condemn the excessive use of force by police, and we do so in strongest terms. We believe that police have got to be courteous when they deal with the people. They've got to be respectful when they deal with the people. They have to communicate with the people and make sure that people understand and they actually understand that they're breaking the law. You understand? So it's very important for police to engage with the people. But when a police officer's life is under imminent danger, a threat, that is the only time then that the exception applies, if I may say.
Okay, so I mean they are allowed to defend themselves.
It must be an imminent danger or a threat. For example, if a community member then points a gun towards the police, obviously the person is fighting with the police, like such nature of cases.
Okay, I see. Now, does IPED assist with, on the one hand, yes, the police are disciplined if they are found to have contravened the rules or the law. Does IPED assist on the other side? Let's say there's compensation that is due, or must a victim claim that, say, through the court, or does IPED get involved in that process as well?
No.
Oh wow! so then, so it's straight to court.
Our mandate is limited. We don't investigate everything that has got to do with the police. We are very much limited to those 8 items that are in our in the IPED Act Section 28. There's got about 8 matters that mandates IPED to investigate. And anything that falls outside the IPED mandate, then
IPED
does not investigate.
Okay. Well, we're running a little bit short of time, so we're probably just going to ask you a couple more questions. How accessible are you, and where can you be found?
Okay. We've got our head office. We are based in Pretoria. We've got offices in all 9 provinces, and then in those provinces, we've got provincial heads that are senior management. So they all have got numbers that are accessible. They are available on our website, and our website is www.ipid.gov.za. And then secondly, we also have got a number that community members call whenever they need to lodge complaints with IPED, and it's 012-399-0000. And then as well, on our website, if someone needs to lodge the complaint, the form is available on our website, and the person can fill in the form and scan their complaint and send to our email, that is complaints@ipet.gov.za. And we are also available on social media, though we are not necessarily there because we are currently short staffed, but we do have a Twitter account that we also sometimes get some of the complaints and clarity seeking questions on Twitter. So those are the platforms that are available for people to lodge their complaints.
Thank you so much, Leka. Yes, we are still here. I don't know if Tepo disappeared for a moment. Thank you so much. Yes. I think we appreciate your time, understanding IPED a bit more, and hopefully this is something that we can do, you know, every now and again. It's so important. There are so many different institutions in the country, and I feel like not everyone is well-versed on what's available to them and which institutions to go to seek help, you know. So it's important, and I'm so happy that IPED has you know, come onto Law Focus and, you know, given us more information about their mandate and the work that you guys do. I learned a lot, and I'm sure the listeners did too. Thank you so much for joining us this evening on Law Focus.
Thank you so much for having us.
Listening to Law Focus? Connect with BallFam 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer.
So today we're speaking to Titus Mamedze, who's a resident of Alex and suffered a brutal assault at the hands of the police. We heard what he had to say. It's very disturbing. Let's hope that something good can come out of that, that he gets justice and that his case is not simply forgotten. We also heard from Ms. Ndileka Xola, who was part of IPED. Very insightful. A lot of information that we got there, you know, the limits of what IPED can actually do and where they can be of great use. I didn't know some of the things that that she had told us, but and I'm very glad that she, you know, explained as well as clarified a couple of issues for us. So that was a very good conversation. So keep tuned into our show so that you can enjoy more legal information and stories. Thank you and good night from our team. That's Mitsapho Mahapi, Millicent Ndiweni, Refilwe Mekwa, Kutlwane Serame, and everyone else at the studio.
Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus. Law Focus Podcast.